That's a good example of whoever's the clearest wins. Because if you do something da-da-da-da, and a little bit of body language goes a long way in that case. I mean, you just recognize, like, when are the times in the tomb that people are unclear on what's happening next? And sometimes just looking around. If you look around and you look like you're going to keep playing the melody, then that's going around again. If you look around and it, you know, kind of horn up, and many more players have this advantage, you can actually pick your instrument up. And so if you look up and ba-da-da-da-da, okay, that's the end. That's got to be it. So, yeah, and then the only other confusion, in general, way better communication with solos and order and head and all that stuff. The only confusion was with fours. In that case, no, that was fine what you did. You jumped in, and that's what I want people to do. But then after that, usually it would go to the first soloist.
Yeah, I totally
missed
that song.
That's okay. But then you jumped in and it was fine. So it worked itself out. I want to keep not saying anything, though, to kind of force you guys to work that stuff out between yourselves. Because it's a good exercise. Well, basically what's going to happen in any jam session, if you go sit in with people you haven't played with, or even people you have, and you don't have an agreed upon form, you're going to have to deal with that. The only other two things that I think could use a little bit of attention is with comping between you two guys.
Right.
Yeah, I would be really conscious of when the other person is comping for a soloist. Like, do you remember which one of you comped for the first solo?
I did.
Yeah. And I thought that was nice. So there were times doing little sparse things. In addition to the other comping instrument, like think bassy, for example, or in your case, think Freddie Green, the guitar for bassy band, just going chunk, 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 chunk. That's not going to be disruptive. It's more if you're both trying to do the same thing, that then you start stepping on each other's toes. I mean, I remember there was a jam session where, I mean, and this happened to all levels. There was a jam session about a month ago, and I was trying to comp and trying to communicate with this guitar player, and afterwards we were talking and realizing that we were both looking for the same holes. It's like, oh yeah, well I thought maybe I'd lay out for a little bit, but then if there was a hole, it's like, yeah, I'm going for the same hole. That's not going to work. It's like, have you guys ever been in a band, and maybe in middle school or high school or something, where there's a little break in the melody and everybody jumps in? It's that situation where all of a sudden just everybody has the same idea. So I think the simplest solution is alternate, at least to start out with. And if you hear one person start to comp, don't keep comping. Maybe lay out or do something really different texturally. Yeah, and then the other thing was with the solos, I feel like everybody can arpeggiate a little bit more. There's some real, we've been talking about kind of staying close with small fragments of ideas and stuff, but at the same time, a lot of great soloists, what they're doing is basically just delineating changes in their ideas. So, I don't know, I'm curious, if you guys sit down to, like, just practice playing on loops, what kind of stuff do you guys do? Anybody?
I usually start with
Chopin,
just playing the root, like, for each thing, and then, then I'll try to, like, arpeggiating each of the changes, you know, along with the background.
Yeah, you have a backing track or something?
Yeah, I have iRoom Pro, and I have
a pretty good one.
Things.
Okay, yeah.
So
those are all good. Yeah, that's definitely a good way to get your fingers around some stuff.
And then I will try to find the common tones, but I have trouble just doing that without writing it out.
That'll take some time.
Yeah, like if I take the time and write out the common tones throughout the thing, and then do that to the music, then.
Yeah. And that gets that line in your ear. If you have a couple lines that you're hearing on the changes, then something might come out of that at some point. Or maybe not, that's fine too. I don't know, anybody else?
I'm trying to find a book.
Yeah, like a little thing. Yeah, that's another great thing to hear. And hearing how that theme changes with the chords is a great way to I know we've talked in our lessons about just finding different ways of arpeggiating using scales. One thing that might be useful along with that just arpeggiating everything from the root is using different burdens, because that is a little bit more continuous. So, for example, on a B-flat blues, doing something. Much of a game of whack-a-mole, where, okay, I'm going to start from the root on this one, I'm going to start from the root on this one, and just finding different ways of doing that. Almost, we have an advantage, guitarists and piano players, because we talk all the time. And we kind of do that for chord voicings, so, you know, breaking down chord voicings and arpeggiating them and weaving them together. So the way it's kind of working on the next one. Yeah. Take, like, another couple courses each and just focus on really delineating those changes with different ways of arpeggiating. Go a little slower. And why don't you guys switch off the comping too? Yeah. Yeah, and actually we've done that too a little bit. It's just different ways of arpeggiating things. Yeah, you can kind of use that parameter. Let's just try, let's just try it again. Alright, let's just go around, maybe, who wants to start?
Yeah, just solo?
Yeah, just solo.
Okay.
Let's just take a couple choruses of blues. Alright, one, a little slower. One. Yeah, take one more.
that's the idea. So it feels a little forced at first to do that, because we all kind of have our scalar ideas that we're used to. But I would go back to older horn players, honestly. Maybe the farthest yet, maybe Sonny Rollins or somebody like that. But Coleman Hawkins, Lester Young, those guys were really kind of arpeggio focused. And it was just, I hear you starting to do this already a lot, is just putting in one or two neighbor notes to those arpeggios. But a lot of it is kind of where to put them, how to lead smoothly into the next thing that you're going to play. But that way also, you're really delineating all the harmonic information that you need. And that, you know, you don't feel like the rhythm section is keeping you in your place. You do feel like if the rhythm section wasn't there, you'd still be clear on what chord you're on. And you know, and for private lessons and stuff, I often have people write out solos using some of these concepts. So a good exercise. I mean, would it be too much? Could everybody write out one chorus of a solo, trying to fit in? To just play alone with bass and drums. So the and to see if it, you know, to see if it delineates the changes. Really using a lot of those arpeggiated things. Because composition is the same thing, it's just you have a little bit more time to deal with it than when you're on the spot. And, you know, write a couple solos over time, maybe some of that vocabulary seeps in. So let's do that next time, because I think that everything feels good. It could just use a little. Everybody could use a little more of that, and then that frees the rhythm section up tremendously. Because there's never a question of, are we lost? Are we all on the same chord? It's more, okay, well, the soloist's got their thing, and I've got my thing, and then just kind of focus on interacting.
I know one thing that I struggled with is learning the arpeggios from like the root, and then you go through it. So when it comes time to change.
Right, you have, you know, maybe you have one pathway to start out with, and if you're not in the place where you can use that arpeggio that you've learned. And so part of it for you might be, and, you know, yeah, practicing them from the third, from the fifth, that's
right.
All good. But in the end, you also have to put it together, because maybe writing out a solo can help with that. So you say, all right, so I ended up on the third of this chord, how can I slide down to a note of the next arpeggio? They work that out in your writing, and then you get a better idea of how to go. So, but yeah, that's a common thing.
What was your thought process for yourself?
Just trying to connect and not really use too many notes outside of those four tones. It's just part of it is the guide tone thing that we've been talking about. That if you notice that at the end of the B flat chord, you're here. Starts to kind of play around with that. So it's just being fluid with a lot of ways of getting between chord numbers. And a lot of that is just listening to the way that other people do it. Some of it is writing your own. But especially if you're practicing, you end up somewhere, force yourself to resolve it in a way that makes sense. Don't just pick up your, in piano case, don't just pick up your hand and move back to where it's comfortable for you. Try to figure out how to, because those connecting points are really the points where you know, have the most to learn from yourself. In the sense that, okay, wait, maybe the next time I get here, I'll know what to do after this. Cool. Let's do one more familiar one. We do either... let's see. Oh, let's try Nardis again, because we did that at the end of last time. In the okay. Yeah, sorry to keep going over all this harmonic stuff.
Oh, that's fine.